We love being local because we live here too.
Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
Hello, it's Daniel Pitt here with Life and Art with Cambridge Junction on Cambridge 105. That was the Bookmark Show with, and you are with me for the next hour. I'm live in the studio and we're going to be looking through the next month and a bit beyond and a brief look back in terms of what's happening around the city in the arts and culture and things that you should be going to, things that might interest you. I'm going on a tour around Wising Arts Centre. I'm having a chat with Malvika Anderson from the Festival of Ideas. Going to talk to Caroline Wright about the Curating Cambridge Museums project. I'll be talking about 1984 coming up at the Arts Theatre, Cambridge Music Festival, particular playing out a bit of music by Philip Glass, who is appearing at the Corn Exchange, and a brief look through the Cambridge Literary Festival programme. So I'm first of all going to play you the recording. I went on a guided tour and met with Lotta Yule Peterson, who is one of the curators at Wising Arts Centre. If you don't know Wising, it's a visual arts development space and gallery outside Cambridge in Bourne, and has a great track history of extraordinary visual art being made and developed there. You'll hear a little bit more about the exhibition they've currently got on. Hello, so I'm here at Wising Arts Centre. We're in the farmhouse and I'm with Lotta Yule Peterson, who has co-curated their new exhibition, The Influence of Furniture on Love. Hello, Lotta.
Hello.
We've just been for a walk around their new exhibition. And unusually for Wising, it is in their living quarters for the artists that come in residencies here in the farmhouse, rather than in their new, well, fairly recently built White Walled Gallery. We're here in the kitchen where the artists who stay sometimes months at a time, is that right, or...?
Yeah, from it all varies actually. From shorter residencies, which could be a week, which we call retreats, to longer residencies, which could actually be for up to 3 months or even more, because we do want to create long-term relationship with artists. So many artists are coming back after their residencies in the house.
Great, so lots of the artists, or is it every single artist who's exhibiting here in this particular exhibition has been on a residency or retreat in this house previously?
Yeah.
And we're here in the kitchen, and it's going to be reductive to describe what everything is, but I'm going to do a few things. There's a coffee percolator, there's cups, there's saucers, There's a kettle that's not an artworks but has been chosen. There's a pile of coffee and a couple of spoons. It's the installation as one, but it's not all art as such, is it? It's been chosen, and as you walk around the house, it's a bit like playing a game of spot the art in some ways.
Yeah, and I guess that's the intention of the show, is to also blur those boundaries between art and life. So some of the artworks, they are blurring because they could literally be in use, or they are meant to be read from or kept or actually used. Now that we're also in the kitchen, there is a specific notice board as well that will be used for after. So Giles Round, who is an artist we've worked with since 2011, really cares for Wising and cares specifically also for the farmhouse. We decided that to have a quite holistic approach to this show, so there will be quite a lot of the work staying for afterwards, which have a very specific purpose and usability. And I think that's kind of been really, really a key focus, is to care and love for the house. So it points into a future, and it points into as well what we have actually talked a lot about this year at Wising in our artistic program is theme of the future, like learn from the past but look into the future. So this show has also, you know, literally actually trying to point into the future for the future artists to enjoy some of these works which will be kept here in the house.
So if we walk back through into the I guess it would be the lounge.
The lounge, the front room.
The front room. One of the projects which is planning to be continuing into the future of Rising is the library. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so Ruth Beale, who is an artist that Rising also have quite a long-term relationship with, she works a lot with libraries within her own work. And with her, Giles and I, we discussed the possibility of actually conceptualizing a library specifically for the farmhouse. And the library is basically donations from previous residency artists, staff or studio artists. We have loads of studios at Rising as well. And many, both staff and studio artists obviously also do care a lot for literature. And also obviously the artists who come here in the farmhouse and stay here over the time. So basically we've asked initially the artists who live here now or are having studios here now and those who are actually in the show. But long term, we're going to ask all of the artists who come through the house to donate a book which they care for. And what will be inserted into the book is a book plate, which actually also name you as a author somehow, like a meta author to the book. So there is a kind of an idea behind the donation. So people have to think a bit about their donation rather than just leaving something behind quickly. So it's something that's part of the strategy again to care and really think about the importance of setting up a system that could be inspirational when you come here on a residency. And the shelves have been specifically designed by Giles Round as well, so there's been kind of a consideration in terms of how to present the library.
The book plates correspond to the same artist's wallpaper in the bedroom. One of the things I've particularly picked up on is that there's little bits that match throughout the house. Things aren't separated out. It's sort of living and breathing of in and around. Outside in the tree, there's an installation which corresponds to the towel racks. Which, as a house as a whole in itself, it's a nice experience to piece these things together as a whole as well. You've probably been hearing some piano playing in the back of this recording. This is the film as part of an installation with a particularly cool looking leather seat. Which you are allowed to sit on, but it wouldn't look like you were. Is there one piece that's not staying into the future of the?
Yeah, this is actually a pre-existing work by Gil Leung. We really particularly thought of her work, but also her practice really sits into the interest of. And also, you know, really kind of, a sincere interest in interior design and interior space, but also into objects and fetishism. And that kind of possibility of interacting with the work has some kind of a distance. So you can actually sit on this chair. At the same time, the floor of the chair actually has to be rearranged with these marble bricks, so it does feel that it has its own kind of space.
It's segmented from the room.
So there is also that kind of distance to not only kind of in a very literal way just sit there and read the book, which is a book by Marguerite Duras. And it's all about language and deconstruction as well. So it somehow kind of encourage reading in a visual way, but not, I mean, but not only linguistic.
Mm.
So it's quite intriguing as an installation, I think. And she's really considered the front room with a piece as well on the windows, which is, she's basically repainted the windows, so it does cast a new lighting into the space. So she's repainted the windows with the material of yogurt.
Is that what it is?
It is, actually.
You didn't say that before.
It's actually a quite simple but and subtle, but a quite powerful impact on the room.
And that will be cleaned up afterwards.
That would be cleaned up afterwards, yeah.
Moving on upstairs, and linking back to the title as we go towards the bedrooms, The Influence of Furniture on Love comes from an unpublished essay by economist John Maynard Keynes, which is held in the archives of King's College in Cambridge. Is there a direct connection to love in this exhibition, or would you say it was more about the influence of art into life and art in domestic settings? Where does the love come into it?
The love, yeah. I think that essay is really interesting because it's not only about love, actually. It's about also how environments can suggest feelings and thoughts and indirectly love, like from rooms, so how that actually affect you as an individual. I think there's definitely kind of, I guess, love and care is very much connected to this exhibition. So not necessarily a personal love affair to anyone, but it's more
apart from the bedrooms,
the bedrooms, yeah. I think love is very much connected to care and attention as well, and a kind of maintenance actually.
Care is, there's clearly a lot of care being put into the installation, and I know that you've done a lot of refurbishment of this house as part of the planning and as its 25th birthday of Whiting Arts Centre to secure it for the future, I guess. And it's a wonderful house. The story goes that the beams are from the Spanish Armada.
That's the reason why everything is a bit uneven and kind of, it's a, even the beams are quite epic actually. So I think also what we try to make each room tell a bit of a story, whether it's like something, you know, it's a kind of new attention, not necessarily love in a kind of literal way, but it does suggest, each room does, as the essay actually also tried to describe, is that how rooms can affect your feeling and thoughts, not only kind of love as a theme.
The room which had the most feeling impact on me is we're walking into now. It's one of the larger rooms. You can probably hear the echo slightly. And it appears empty, and then you turn around and there is a light green chest of drawers with a gun on top of it, and that is all. Can you tell me who this artist is and what a bit about the piece?
Yeah, so this is a piece by Elizabeth Price, who came on residency a couple of years ago, and we asked Elizabeth whether it would be possible she could contribute to the show, but in a particular way, with a sculpture piece or an object, because a lot of her actually sculpture pieces or object have some kind of, suggest some kind of usability and or props to be included in a film. So we wanted, instead of installing a big filmic installation, we felt, you know, actually taking it from there, from that starting point, would be just far more honest in a way with her work. And she came up together with her gallery with this piece, and we were completely overwhelmed and stunned because we felt like this is totally right. You know, had to have a, not only a chest of drawers, but the gun on top of it does really suggest a completely new narrative to the house. And I guess there's a lot of mythical, the same thing like with the beams being from the Spanish Armada, there's a lot of potential to tell a story within the house in a in a far more emotional or sensitive way than if this work was installed in a white cube.
Yeah, totally. And with the...
And the way we've installed it, as you say as well, the way you came in and introduced it, is that we wanted to install it. So actually you thought you would go into a completely empty space, but we've slightly hidden it. So you need to kind of... it just really surprised you, I think, when you come in.
Yeah, and it says all it needs to.
Yeah.
With all the stories of all the artists that have been living here, it's probably got more stories than most houses would have.
Yeah.
With a transient population.
Yeah.
So how many people would usually be in residence in this house at once?
So at once, up to 4 people. Sometimes artists, they work as couples. So if you add that up, then it varies from 4 to 6, I would say. But it's, you never really know. But in general, we would say like 4. And then obviously as well, we do also consider if artists have families as well. We try to facilitate as well, if they do have families, that they could come here on and off with their families if needed. So I think that's, we don't really exclude people in that way. We try to be as inclusive as possible, because we know it's hard for artists if they have families to go on a residency.
Yeah.
So we do try to kind of facilitate as much as possible with amount of flexibility. And as you saw as well, there is a cat walking around in the house, which is actually a cat which belongs to Weising. The cat, it does feel a bit funny as a show, because normally the cat doesn't walk around in the gallery space, but because the cat actually lives in an annex attached to the farmhouse, where one of the artists who is in the show, Lisa Wilkins, she's Weising's caretaker. But it does feel kind of interesting. We were just walking upstairs and all of a sudden we hear the piano from the front room started to play, which we thought, oh, is it someone here? But it was actually the cat. So
the cat knows nothing about the conventions of art galleries.
So we talked about that as well, didn't we, with those boundaries being blurred of how to behave in a gallery space is challenged when actually starting... from this point of view in a very domestic setting.
Listeners, if you come to visit this show, which I definitely recommend you do, the rules are you can play the piano, you can sit on the chairs, you can lie on the bed, and you can watch the TV, which is showing Weising's own TV channel. I don't know what else you can do. Maybe don't take out the towels from the towel racks. That might be less keen on that.
Yeah, they have been rearranged for a very particular purpose.
Neat. And the residencies that you offer here at Weising are artists of all careers, but Weising has a particular sort of, particularly famous for supporting artists who are just on the way up.
Yeah.
And as one of the curators here, what do you look for in an emerging artist?
I mean, obviously, we're quite keen, if you come on a residency here, that's quite often the starting point, actually, we do it either directly via invitation or open calls. So it's a mixture. So we want to make sure that we have an openness within the program. That's quite important, actually. But obviously, we can also steer the program from our interest better if we also invite people directly, that we're kind of looking at specific works. What we actually, with artists who are on it's quite a mixture. We do want to reach many different levels. So it's like younger artists, mid-career, more established artists. We want to work on many different levels. But I would say, like, overall, we want to encourage them kind of free thinking and also to take risks within their own work and try out new things when they're on the residency here. So that's quite, on these different levels of artist practice, I think that's, we really want to, but in a very supportive way. We don't want you to just come and just do like something where you don't feel like you're kind of supported on the way. So there's a lot of discussions before you actually maybe delivering something So that's like, we want to be kind of an organization which is encouraging that.
Great. So what date in November does this exhibition close and it goes back to being a residency space?
Yeah, it goes back very quickly to be a residency place. So basically the last day of the show is on the 2nd of November, and we host two artist-led dinners in the gallery space, actually. So we want to make that private situation public on the 11th of October and on the 2nd of November. And we will host the new residency artist literally the week after. so we have a quite
quick turnaround,
yeah, just to make it easy for ourselves. But yeah, we do, because this was actually the only chance to do the show, because obviously we need to use this as a place for residency artists, on a daily level.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So it's quite a unique chance to come in to see the house. Normally it's not open to the public, so I can only encourage people to come.
Definitely. That is the Influence of Furniture on Love at Rising Arts Centre out in Bourne. It's definitely worth a visit out of Cambridge City Centre. Thank you, Glotta.
Thank you.
For the city.
We are Cambridge 105.
Back in the studio, I've been looking through how many festivals there are in Cambridge, because I've just realised that I was going to be talking today about at least four festivals happening in Cambridge. And there's also the film festival, the folk festival, the summer music festival, as opposed to the music festival that's happening this autumn. There's theatre festivals at Cambridge Junction, there's the science festival, there's beer festivals, there's Lodestar, there's Dragon Boat Festival, there's Cambridge Festival, Cambridge Shakespeare Festival. There's just so many festivals in the city. I wonder whether anyone has actually tried to work out how many days of the year there are when there isn't some kind of festival of something happening in the city. Which, for a fairly small city, I think is really quite impressive and something to potentially celebrate. But one of the big university-led festivals is the Festival of Ideas. You can't escape it. The city has already been plastered with lamppost signs about it already. The Festival of Ideas is starting on the 20th of October, next Monday, that will be. And I caught up with Malvika Anderson.
I'm here with Malvika Anderson, who is the festival programmer of Cambridge Festival of Ideas, which is happening this year from 20th of October to 2nd of November. Malvika, hello.
Hi.
Tell us a bit about the festival in general and what you've got coming up.
Sure. So the festival is organised primarily by the University of Cambridge, and we work very closely alongside partners across the city, like the Junction, like Anglia Ruskin University, like the Cambridge Arts Salon, etc. And we put together a nice big programme of events. This year, 256 events.
That is a lot of events.
Quite shocking. But it's very exciting. We try to be as broad as possible. So we've got everything from the arts to debates and discussions about the future of Cambridge, and also, I don't know, got things to do with animals and zoology and botany and everything, really. So it's a really broad spread.
How many do you make it to every year?
Me, myself, personally? Yeah. I'd like to say all of them, but far from it. I make it to about, let's say, three a day for 2 weeks. So that's not bad, is it?
No.
That's pretty good.
That is enough, enough events to see, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I challenge anybody who listens to the radio show to see more than that of the festival. Good luck.
What about you, Daniel? How many do you see a year at the Festival of Ideas?
Maybe about four.
Four? That's really good. That's good enough. To up that this year.
I'll give it a good go. I'll be going to at least two of them.
At least.
No, at least three of them, actually.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
What would be your top tip of the entire festival before we move on to arts programme?
I'm very excited about the Women of the World Day, actually, which is which we're working, of course, in collaboration with the Junction and the South Bank Centre in London. And it's happening on the 26th of October. It's the first time we're doing it, which is a little bit more, so it makes it a lot more exciting and nerve-wracking in a sense. But it's a full day of events, all happening at the Junction. And again, things from talks and discussions to a marketplace to lots of hands-on activities for children, and then of course a fantastic cabaret at the end.
Yeah, and it's suitable for all ages, and it's not just arts things, it's all kinds of stuff by women, particularly from Cambridge.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then yes, in the evening, selected by open call, is a Women of Cambridge cabaret. Which we've there's got belly dancing, we've got flamenco dancing, we've got bits of theatre, we've got some burlesque, we've got some music with a film behind it, and all from people living, working in Cambridge, headlined by performance poet Hannah Jane Walker and hosted by Faye Roberts, who also hosts the Hammer and Tongue Poetry Nights at the Fountain on Thursdays, if you want to go. I think every second Thursday, potentially. Don't quote me on that. So the other arts things, then. Obviously, that's arts and culture and thoughts and debate and all kinds of things, but particular art events that you're looking forward to.
So as a sort of across the festival, we're working with the University of Cambridge Museums on a sort of larger project called Curating Cambridge. So we've got hundreds and hundreds of visual arts events we're working on with them. So very closely working with the museums like Fitzwilliam Museum on the Silent Partners exhibition, which is a huge one. And then we're sort of responding with a few events around that during the festival. And so those are kind of like the broader arts program in the visual arts that we're doing. But we're also working with Art Language Location, which is a sort of big public art project. And they are going to be based primarily on the Sidgwick site, which is the home of the Festival of Ideas, in a sense, because that's where we're based on the weekends during the festival. And they've got an open day with lots of artists showing their work and also a number of performances by various artists. So,
and they focus on text-based installations
exactly
in particular places.
Exactly. So they've used a lot of university buildings this year, and we've sort of helped facilitate that in a sense. And they've used various libraries, lots of sort of open spaces around town that are that have links to the university and otherwise as well. So, yeah,
great. And the majority of those artists are Cambridge-based, aren't they?
They are. They are. I mean, there is a sort of much. There is an opening up this year, so there's been quite a few international artists as well involved, which is really good. In fact, there's one project in particular which is quite exciting, which will happen on the 25th of October on the Sidgwick site, which is this lady from Italy who's doing this poetry project, and she's inviting people to submit poems, like short poems in their native languages, and a translation in English, and it's all going to be written out on this huge, massive, colourful tarpaulin on the day, and then it's going to be suspended around the Sidgwick site, which should be great.
So, great, we'll definitely come and see that.
Absolutely.
I heard about a project called the Panopticon.
So this is a fantastic idea, and we're working with artist Leo, and she's and in collaboration with Anglia Ruskin University as well. So the installation, it's a large scale installation. It's looking at questions around surveillance and our future in an age of surveillance, really.
The original, the Panopticon, I haven't checked this fact, so they're just in my head now.
Yeah,
is Jeremy Bentham's designed for a prison where the guards can see everybody?
Yeah, that's absolutely, you have it right. you don't even need to check your facts. That's absolutely right.
That was a relief.
Yeah, and of course, like when you start, I mean, it's a word that appears a lot in sort of literary theory and things like that, because it's sort of become then, as a result, a sort of almost a theoretical framework to understand our age and the age we live in. And I think that's what the artist is going to be exploring through this. And it's a sort of custom-built, huge installation in Anglia Ruskin University that and it's an interactive one. So you're very much a part of this process of surveillance, and you become part of it. Mm. And it should be a one. I mean, I haven't actually been in it myself yet, but I intend to, and I think it should be a really fantastic experience.
I've booked my tickets already.
Oh, fantastic!
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
And if you're particularly into surveillance and the problems of the modern age, then maybe you want to go and see 1984, which is the Arts Theatre as well.
And maybe you want to come to a discussion about it on Saturday, the 1st of November, at the Lady Mitchell Hall in the Sidgwick site. Four big professors talking about it then.
Definitely should. Hip Hop Psych. So this is a hip hop gig in the West Road Concert Hall, which is a slightly subversive place to put
it. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to that. That's one of my big highlights of the festival, in a sense. It's particularly because it's got a nice... it's not just a regular gig. They're calling it a takeover of West Road Concert Hall. So it's like all four elements of hip-hop, some say five, all being looked at very, very in a sort of celebratory fashion, but then also involving some researchers, both from the Faculty of Music and also from psychology and neuroscience, who are sort of going to be looking at the social context of hip hop and how that may be, in a sense, related to how mental illness may be related to that. So there's going to be a little bit of talk, but it's primarily going to be sort of performance based and sort of picking apart bits of lyrics and sort of like understanding the history of hip hop from a musical perspective, but also from this quite sort of social, psychological perspective. So
I'm going to test you now. What are the four or five?
Oh my god! Okay. Definitely. So emceeing, so that's the rapping, DJing, graffiti, and breakdancing. Those are the four. I don't know what the fifth is. They say the fifth is like knowledge or something like that, but I don't... They call it the four elements of hip-hop, so I definitely passed that test.
Great. Proved your street credentials.
Drum roll.
Yeah. Looking briefly forward to other some other things in the festival... Metis, who are a performance company run by Zoe Svensson, who is also a lecturer in the English department mm-hmm. of the university. Mm-hmm. She's been working on a project called World Factory for over a year now.
Yeah.
Research-led project about the conditions of factory workers making textiles and clothing, and particularly in China.
Mm-hmm.
I know from inside knowledge that it's going to be... I don't know where this is. It's going to be at London Theatre that I maybe shouldn't be able to talk about yet in public. But it's going to be a finally created interactive theatre piece in London next year. But in the festival, there's a part of it called The Game.
Mm, which will be on the 1st of November.
If you're interested in new digital technology in performance, or you're interested in the subject of... of labour workforce or mm-hmm. anything like that, then come along and be part of it's part of the research and development phase. Absolutely. Leading up to the real show that will be created, and you should go and see it in London or Ipswich.
Mm. Exciting.
Yeah. Phantom Voices, lastly, just before we leave.
Phantom Voices is another very exciting one, I think. It's happening on the 31st of October, Friday, at the Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology, quite appropriately. If you've been into that space, you'll see that it can very easily lend itself to Phantom Voices. but it's they're calling it a history of music in seven hauntings, or five hauntings, depending on time, really. But it's essentially... a project by Edward Wickham, who's from the University Music Department, and he's going to be looking at the history of music, but musical hallucination. So it's going to be a concert experience. It's by the Clarks, that's his ensemble, and they're going to be putting together this wonderful concert in this quite eerie location of the Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology.
Great. That's so, just a small sample of all the things happening in the Festival of Ideas. Mm. I don't think anybody can possibly go to them all.
No.
But the brochures are out and about around the city at the moment. I'm sure that it's you're never far from a pick-up point of a Festival of Ideas brochure, or even a poster. There are a lot. It's one of the big festivals of Cambridge, and you should definitely find something. You will definitely find something that interests you in it. And most of it's free, so go along.
Exciting.
Thanks, Malvika.
Thank you, Daniel.
Your city, our city, because we live here too.
Cambridge 105.
We do live here as well. I live just up the road. It's Daniel Pitt here. I'm presenting the Life and Art Show with Cambridge Junction, taking you through what to look forward to and what to see around Cambridge in the arts and culture. Venues, galleries, theatres, festivals, all kinds of stuff. Other things, I'm also the arts producer at Cambridge Junction. I look after the theatre and dance programme and the family programme. And so I'm slightly biased, I will be totally honest, and say that there are a couple more events in the Festival of Ideas that are going to be unmissable. The first one, which is a co-commission actually between the Cambridge Festival of Ideas and Cambridge Junction, is a project called Fiction. I mentioned this last month actually in my little feature on the three shows in the dark being made and presented in Cambridge at that time. This is coming up very soon. It's on the Tuesday 28th and Wednesday 29th of October. It's a show in the dark, complete darkness, where you are, it's trying to create the audience experiencing lucid dreaming. You will feel as if you're falling asleep and be transported through the sprawling places of our dreams in this exercise in empathy, as the copy says. And it's been made in collaboration with Dr. Tristan Beckenstein, who is from the Cognition and Brain Sciences Unit at Cambridge University, specialising in in dreaming, and to create, using binaural audio sound, the experience of dreaming, falling asleep and being transported through your dreams. David Rosenberg and Glenn Neath, David being the director and Glenn being the writer, have been consulting with Tristan to work to see if this is possible. The show has opened in Bournemouth just recently, and it comes to Cambridge. It's part of the Festival of Ideas, 28th, 29th, and on the 28th there'll be a post-show discussion with the director, with the writer, with myself and Tristan, talking about the process of how that happened, and I guess you have to judge for yourself whether it's actually worked, whether theatre can recreate the effect of dreaming, regardless of whether it totally does the right thing in terms of recreating that. It doesn't in some ways matter, because it's still a very cool experience, a great piece of unusual theatre, and something that's been actually made, and all the audio for it has been recorded in Cambridge in the Judith E. Wilson studio on the English department studio, and in hotel rooms and cafes and woodland in and around Cambridge. And you will be transported through all those places without ever leaving your seat. Well, hope you don't leave your seat anyway. Don't walk out, please. And then the other piece is, that's for adults, really. Probably recommended for 14, 16 plus. But if you are a family and you're listening, there's an extraordinary show called L'Après-Midi d'un Fern, which was originally developed when the company Non Nova, who are a French company, were invited to go to a residency in a science museum in Nantes in France and work with scientists there, again collaborations between arts and science, around vortexes and what they could do using vortexes. And so this show is one of three they made as a product of this residency, where they set up about 8-10 fans very, very precisely that so they are all blowing towards the centre, creating a vortex in the centre, and that by controlling the speed of the fans at different angles, they can control the shape and the size of the vortex inside there. And the man, well, there's a video online. I'm not ruining this for you. It's totally worth seeing live. Don't just trust the video is you've seen it. It's not the case. But the man enters and he puts together, creates ballet dancers out of plastic bags, and a whole troupe of ballerinas, which are plastic bags, dance to the music of Debussy, controlled by these fans, and it's one of the most beautiful, charming performances I've ever seen. When my girlfriend saw it with me, she cried. There was a kid in front of us that morning that the performer came over to afterwards and said, "I've seen you here lots this week." and the kid had kept coming back with his parents every day because he loved it so much. And it's, even if you aren't a kid, it's totally worth seeing. That's on Thursday 23rd, evening performances, 5:30 and 7:30, or Saturday 25th at 12 noon and 2:30. Really recommend it, both in Cambridge Junction's programme and the Festival Ideas programme. Alongside the Festival of Ideas, the Curating Cambridge, which is a university museums collaboration, kicks off the first 2 weeks of its 5 weeks. And I met with Caroline Wright, who's an artist living and working nearby, about two projects that she is working on in the festival. And this is what we said.
I'm joined by Caroline Wright, who's an artist based at Rising Arts Centre and living in Suffolk, who is doing two projects in the Curating Cambridge programme, which, if you don't know, is a 7-week festival beginning on the 20th of October with the Festival Ideas programme, led by the University of Cambridge Museums, but running across the city with lots of different organisations, in museums, in venues, in people's houses even, I think, with Caroline's project. What's the project called, Caroline?
Well, the one I think we're going to talk about today is called My Home is My Museum, and it came about through a long-standing interest that I have in collecting. I think it was probably sparked by my parents, both of whom collect, my dad in particular, has lots of collections of different things, and also a spell working in a museum many moons ago, and I became quite fascinated with the structure of the museum as an institution and the notion of value invested in objects. And then thinking about how that might happen when we look around our own homes and we've got things on our mantelpieces or on our shelves, and what value they have to us, whether they're significant for their historical value or their emotional value or their financial value or their rarity value, whatever it is. I'm just really quite interested in the things that we keep and we hold that are dear to us.
So it's a much more personal version of curating than the museums, particularly here, expounds.
Yeah. I mean, this is how we curate our own lives, if you like, through the objects that we have on display. And of course, the thing about that is that because they're in our homes, they're usually only available to people that we invite over the threshold and that are our usually friends and family. So the project opens up people's houses through some performances and through an online collection so that everybody can get a chance to have a taste of the sort of things that Cambridge people collect.
And how can people get involved with the project?
Well, there are a couple of ways, in fact, several. I guess the most straightforward way is that we're amassing our own museum collection of My Home is My Museum objects. And we're really keen to hear from anybody who has an object of significance to them, for whatever reason that might be, that they would like to donate, in inverted commas, to our museum.
Which temporarily?
Temporarily. Temporarily. And the donation is through a photograph of it, and a photograph of it in its context, and the stories are associated with it. I mean that's one way. from those objects that are donated through their photographs and that will be online in the museum collection. The Museum of Cambridge, which used to be the Folk Museum, is actually selecting 10 objects to physically put on display in their galleries, and so there will be a physical exhibition of some of the objects as well.
There's something quite subversive about putting everyday objects in a museum, I find. It seems to be undermining the system quite in a nice way.
Well, I think it's sort of taking it back around in a full circle, because there we have them in our homes, and then suddenly by opening the possibility up through the project, then the museum can make a selection of those and bring them in and sort of bring them into the museum context. And if you like, the way that the museum will then afford them another layer of value and another layer of significance by displaying them.
And people will look at them in a different way because they're in that context.
Yeah, I guess they will. And I think that they'll also have a resonance, I guess, with the collection that's already at the Museum of Cambridge. So then there'll be some sort of conversations between this, what was a very private object, with very public objects.
And so, and the performances that you're creating, how can people, where are you doing them, and how are they being made?
Well, they're being made as we speak, and they're taking place in 4 houses in Cambridge. Addresses yet to be revealed when you've booked your ticket. And those performances are bespoke to the contents of those 4 houses. So they are being created especially around the objects that those householders have and around the stories of their objects, but also around the way that they display them. So they're quite small, intimate performances for only a small number of people at a time, and you will go from one house to another and experience a very different performance, I hope, because you'll be in a private space and you'll be welcomed into that private space to witness something that's otherwise hidden away.
Great. And what date are those on?
Okay, so the performances are on the 7th and 8th of November. On the 7th, there are 2 performances at 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock in the evening. And on the Saturday, the 8th of November, they are at 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And you can book for those through the Curating Cambridge website, which is curatingcambridge.org.uk. And if anyone wants to donate an object to the collection, I'd be delighted to hear from you at myhomeismymuseum@gmail.com. That would be great.
I will definitely be going home today and looking, seeing what I can find that's a fitting, nice object to donate.
I'm going to hold you to that. I look forward to it.
I will. I'm trying to work out what the story would be behind the objects, and I'm not sure yet, but I think I've got some nice things.
Well, we've had some amazing donations so far from people, really varied objects, from a shed snake skin to some dog's ashes and a ship in a bottle, and oh goodness, and wonderful stories, and people have really taken it to heart. So yeah, it's great to see that people are getting involved and to find out what they're going to donate.
And are you choosing the ones to go in the museum, or is the museum choosing the ones?
So everything that everybody gets in touch about goes on the online collection, and the ones that are selected for the Museum of Cambridge is being selected by the museum collections manager. So
great.
Don't have any control over
curated
that.
Curated by the museum curator.
Great. Exactly.
Cool. Thank you very much for coming in.
That's all a pleasure. Right. Nice to talk to you.
Community radio in your city.
Follow us on Twitter at Cambridge 105.
Again, my bias, the Cambridge Junction bias, kicks in. And I just want to mention 2 other things which are happening as part of our programme in the Curating Cambridge programme. Tom Roden, who is one of New Art Club, he lives in Royston, just down the road. New Art Club are a comedy dance company, and Tom on his own is making a pub quiz show that's going to be in the tram shed pub on just off East Road on the 3rd of November. It's going to be a light-hearted but intellectually undermining and intellectually stimulating evening pub quiz, which aims to sort of turn the value of knowledge and the value of museums on their head. He's been working with the museums and Cambridge Junction to to make the show, and it should feature some items taken from the handling collections of the museums. And then another bit of slightly unusual sighted programming. There's been lots of projects which are putting real things in museum contexts for the festival. And one project which has been touring, and it's in Cambridge on the 1st and 2nd of November, in the Grand Arcade outside John Lewis, is a show, not a show, it's a project. It's a live artwork called Museum of Water, which is a museum cabinets of full of lots of little jars and bottles of water, which are donated by members of the public. The idea is that you choose some water that's precious to you, you find a bottle to put it in, and then you tell the people there why you chose the water. And it joins the ever-growing Museum of Water, which is which is available both online and wherever it tours to. And people who go up to the stall can ask about the stories behind and have a look at the water and look at the postcards which explain the stories behind them. So that will be in the Grand Arcade on the 1st and 2nd of November for the times that the shopping centre is open, 9 till 6 on Saturday and 11 till 5 on Sunday. Maybe go along on the Saturday, see what it is on the Sunday, bring back some of your own water. Up to you. The next festival, there are so many festivals here. The Cambridge Literary Festival, the winter edition, that's what used to be called Wordfest. It's the bookish festival for Cambridge, I guess. And they've got a festival, it's a one-day festival on the 30th of November, in collaboration with the New Statesman magazine. So it caters to the left-wing people of Cambridge, as it should. Featuring some really great names, people reading and talking about their books, and some speakers who are just interesting people. Highlights for me are Sheila Hancock, the actor and author, now is talking about her new novel, Miss Carter's War. The Everyday Sexism Twitter account runner Laura Bates, who is ever becoming more and more of a celebrity, is talking about her project, not particularly about any book, I don't think, but about the project, and which has snowballed into the mainstream, really. People effectively share stories about places and times that sexism has just crept into society in their lives without anyone really stopping it, and just the thing, the little small things that we have to be able to stop soon. Another highlight for me might be Jack Monroe, who runs the Girl Called Jack blog about how she has lived and particularly eaten while on the dole. And about poverty, and it's turned into a campaigner against hunger and poverty. And she now has a recipe column in The Guardian, and she'll be talking about her second book, A Year in 120 Recipes. So if you are either just feeling a bit of the pinch at the moment, like a lot of us are, or particularly interested in the fight against poverty, then definitely go and see Jack Monroe. Claire Balding is speaking about her book. Owen Jones, another right-on left-winger. and Shami Chakrabarti, director of Liberty, are talking. They've both written individual books in there, but they're on a joint event. It's a really great programme, and The next one, the bigger one, is the Spring Festival, which runs for a few days, the 15th, 19th of April. The two festivals a year, and it should be great if you're into that kind of thing. The brochure is out now around the city, and there is a really great picture of a Christmas tree on a punt, which I'm not sure if it's real or not. Who knows? The next festival that's happening, the next festival, so many festivals, Cambridge Music Festival, their autumn festival, features particular concerts in all kinds of places around the city, including Bach, the Berlin Philharmonic String Quintet, more Bach, Mozart, but my particular tip for you is Philip Glass and the Philip Glass Ensemble, who are playing at the Corn Exchange on Friday the 14th of November. The Philip Glass Ensemble, it makes very repetitive modernist music and has been working for a great time. His work made lots of collaborations with theatre directors and filmmakers, Martin Scorsese. I've seen a couple of his operas in London. Particularly famously was one called Einstein on the Beach, which he made with a theatre director called Robert Wilson. And it was one of the... It's called Einstein on the Beach, and I don't know, it's not really clear what it's really about. But he's also very famous for working with Allen Ginsberg, Woody Allen, David Bowie, and Ravi Shankar. And so he's touring with his ensemble, and I believe that he will be there, which is quite exciting, really, on the 14th of November. And I thought that we would play you out with some of his music. So next up will be a performance, a piece of music called Dance 8 by the Philip Glass Ensemble and guests. And I hope that you enjoy it. I've been Daniel Pitt. I'll be back in a month's time. This is the Art and Life... Life and Art show on Cambridge 105 with Cambridge Junction. If you've got something happening over the next month, in November, then do get in touch with me. My email address is on the Junction website. I'm looking for professional and community arts here in Cambridge, all kinds of art forms, and I'd love to have a chat with you. Maybe you can come in for a chat. Great, this is Philip Glass.